just another manish Sunday.
I wish it was Sunday.
It is, I just said that.
Just another manish Sunday.
Boy, that's bad.
Ooh.
It's new. It's Sunday. It's just another manish Sunday. Hour one, the interview. Our guest today, Blue. Says you can't lose your virginity more than once. I maintain you can lose it many times. Of course, losing it on a Sunday on a radio station on a Jesuit campus is even more fun. Welcome to this new thing called Just Another Menace Sunday. You might know me from Friday nights in the Menace's Attic. This is Dennis the Menace. And I decided I needed two more hours of radio time, so here I am. And this is what it's all about. The first hour is going to be artist interviews with people you know and people that you should know, at least in my not-so-humble opinion. The second hour is going to be all new music. It's going to be fun. As I mentioned at the beginning, you just heard him. Today's guest, he's from Boston. He's power pop. He's a singer-songwriter. He is unbelievably fun. His name is Blue, and we've got a nice interview and some of his music coming up. What I'm going to do first is get rid of a little business, and we'll be back with the interview with Blue. Enjoy, and welcome to Just Another Menace Sunday.
A companion can make all the difference when a person is faced with a chronic and life-threatening HIV infection. PAWS, also known as Pets Are Wonderful Support, is a nonprofit group that cares for the pets of people struggling with HIV and AIDS. More than 200 volunteers go to the homes of clients who are incapacitated by illness. Paws volunteers help with veterinarian trips, feeding and cleaning, grooming, dog walking, and more. Paws is one of the beneficiaries of the San Francisco Bay Guardian Community Fund. For more information on how you can support Paws, call the Community Fund at 415-255-3100. That's 415-255-3100. Brought to you by your four-legged friends here at 90.3 KUSF.
Let's start with the beginning. Would you sign in, please? You're supposed to say my name is. It's kind of like Mad Libs or whatever.
My name is Blue.
You got that right so far.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to the important question, because we mentioned this on the show, and of course now people are hearing this a couple of weeks later. So you had blue hair, but you can't spell.
Well, at the time, I mean, it was a nickname that I was given in college, and kind of like a dorm room nickname sort of thing. And at the time, I thought it was sort of cheesy. So that...
At the time? You mean not now? Yeah, it's not anymore.
I think it's even more cheesy now, but that prompted the spelling. You know, it's blue.
So you,
like, but there was no like the cheese,
right? So there was no. You weren't planning on like singing Jacques Brel songs.
Yeah, no.
So it could be bleh.
Yeah, it's actually to a certain degree, I guess it's the bane of my existence. That I,
can you spell bane? Is the big question.
I'm cursed to have people say, "Are you French?" or "Is it pronounced blah?" for the rest of my life. But
well, you could have named yourself Blah.
Yeah, that
would have been worse.
Hey, you know, it worked for Meatloaf.
And it, you know, I this is going to totally see. We do non-interviews here, so this is going to really. I was on JetBlue. How's that for a segue? A couple of weeks ago, on my way.
I've flown JetBlue.
On my
it's embarrassing, way, but true.
JetBlue. Blue flies JetBlue. On my way to New York, and they were showing a Meatloaf concert.
Oh, wow.
But it was a recent Meatloaf concert. And boy, I mean, he's big again, and he didn't look very good. He looked like he was going to have a heart attack, you know, right in the middle of Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
Well, he always kind of looks like that when he's performing, I think. That's sort of his thing, you know, is that it?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no,
is he going to make it, you know?
But the veins were popping out more than they ever have. And even I think Carla DeVito, the background singer, I think, that, you know, who wasn't on the album, I think that this was still her, you know, 20 years later, and she didn't look so. As hot as she did back then. But what has this got to do with anything? Hey, all kidding aside. Nah, we're going to keep kidding. Too many singer-songwriters out there. I mean, it's an interesting thing because you read the public relations, and here I have all of your, you know, all of your stuff and articles, and I've done my research and all of that. So who do you want to be? Because, again, in the public relations ends of things, it's kind of interesting because you did play a majority, and we'll get to this in a little while, but a majority of the instruments, and then brought in, you know, Dan Wilson and a lot of great people, you know, for the new CD. But this whole singer-songwriter thing, I mean, Bob Dylan was a singer-songwriter, but it's so groovy to be one, and here you are, a singer-songwriter in the 2000s, and what do you think?
I guess I don't really think that much about it, honestly. I mean,
but you're not a band, right?
Well, I wouldn't really say that either. I mean, I do play with a regular group of guys, and certainly a certain portion of the record was rehearsed and like brought together through a significant camaraderie between like a group of guys that I regularly play with.
Right, you didn't just walk in the studio and say, "Hey, let's make a record."
Yeah, so, you know, some of the tunes started out with, you know, just me and my song, and sort of working with the John Fields, who co-produced the record with me, and going from there. But I like working with a regular group of musicians. I like the, not just the camaraderie, but like knowing what they're good at and like kind of like bringing that to the arrangements and that kind of thing. So, you know, when people say, "Well, I don't get it. your name is Blue, so it's just you, but what about the band? People get mad sometimes, actually, especially when they see the shows. And they're like...
Why, are they expecting you to just be you out there with a guitar?
Or no, not so much that, actually. They'll go to the show and see the band and assume that it's a band. And then they're like, well, I don't get it. You know, how come it's just you or whatever? And I always tell people, well, I mean, really, it's kind of both. It for me, I don't feel like it needs to be defined as a band or as a singer-songwriter or as... I mean, it's just good music. It is me. And, you know, I mean, if it were up to me, it wouldn't be my face on the cover of the record. But, you know, my record label has some sort of a rule that says that as a singer, as a solo artist, quote unquote, I must have my face on the cover of the record.
You will have it.
And that, you know, and that kind of thing. So it's, you know, but for me, I just don't feel like those definitions need to be made. You know?
No, but it's interesting because, again, there's so many even clubs like, you know, Largo in L.A. or whatever that John Bryan does his regular, you know, we'll talk about him in a little while because I know you know, he's one of the people that you respect as a producer. But, you know, there's the John Bryan night at Largo in Los Angeles and people just flock there because it's the era of the singer-songwriter. It's a positioning thing, you know?
That's not why people flock to those shows.
No, they flock because the people have immense talent.
Yeah, exactly.
But the marketing machine has done its
its
job.
I don't think people respect John Bryan because he's a singer-songwriter, you know? It's right. Like, you know, and honestly, I mean, even when it comes to like people like, say, John Mayer, probably the premier singer-songwriter right now, I don't really think people enjoy his music or go to see him play because he's a singer-songwriter.
I know.
They go because they love his music, and he's a very, you know, he's a talented musician. I mean, you know.
We've all just worked too hard to label things. I think that's what it comes down to.
Exactly.
Not that that's ever changed before.
People ask me, what kind of music do you do? And I say, rock and roll. It's rock and roll. You know, I mean.
Oh, boy, in this day and age, to give them that answer, right? Tricky stuff.
Actually, I have a song called Nobody Calls It Rock and Roll Anymore. And, you know, I mean, that's what it is. It's like everybody's doing their own thing. You know, it doesn't have to be garimo or whatever, or, you know, like garage pop. Or, you know,
we could spend hours on garage.
Yeah.
You know, we're sitting.
Let's not.
We're sitting in KUSF, the bastion of the garage band. And of course, but you're sitting with Dennis the Menace, the bastion of the, oh my God, I'm playing a lot of stuff on major labels. What's wrong with me? But, you know, we play garage bands too. So I don't know much about, and the bios don't do that much about your musical background. Are you classically trained, or did you just pick up the guitar one day? Or
I did definitely start, learning instruments and that kind of thing at a young age. I took piano lessons when I was younger, but was pretty adamant about not having that be classic. I was always trying to learn things that weren't classical as much as I could. Actually, I got booted by my first piano instructor because I had no interest in learning classical repertoire. And she actually suggested this other piano teacher who ended up being like a really big influence on me and taught me the things that I wanted to learn. I did go to school for music and had a great experience with that, really. I mean, it was a very, like, heady kind of time. I dived.
Did you go to Berkeley? Or?
I went to Berkeley, yeah, mm-hmm. in Boston.
Killer.
And, you know, I was pretty green when I went there, but I really knew what I wanted to get out of school, and I met a lot of people, played with a lot of great musicians, and just learned a lot about, you know, being myself, strangely enough. And,
this all sounds immensely familiar because my first piano teacher was busy teaching me Michael Rowe, Your Boat Ashore, and all that sort of stuff. And I just said to her, okay, you know, I want to do something else. So she recommended a piano teacher who had gone to one of the German conservatories, who after 5 years of piano lessons turned to me and said, And I'm not going to do a bad German accent because our producer Katie will tell you that all of my accents never sound anything like they're supposed to. But the true story is you and I have the same life, because she turned to me and said, well, you know what? I don't think you really want to play classical, and I don't think you want to end up at Carnegie Hall. You want to play rock and roll. So you know everything. You're as good as you can possibly get, and you know everything you need to know to play rock and roll. And she didn't boot me. It was the most polite boot out I've ever gotten.
Yeah.
But it's exactly why we're sitting here today, I suppose. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, I go to the symphony and all of that, and then I sit there and say, well, I guess I could be up there. Nah, you know what? I like the other. It's okay.
Yeah.
But you know, I think so many, getting back to the garage band thing, I think so many garage bands, what the issue is there, that they never really did get a lot of that background in all of that stuff that you got, particularly at Berklee, probably in tons of jazz, you know, being that school is that school. And I think it's a good thing to have that, because it does show up in the rock and roll.
Well, for me, I mean, that was stuff that I kind of like always wanted to know about and always appreciated about music. So, but, you know, for certain bands, certain kinds of music, that's just not where they're coming from. But that's their thing, and they do their thing well. But I mean, I always wanted to make a lot of different kinds of music. I wanted to make like very eclectic, very personal, very kind of like heady, you know, like complex, but still, you know, song writing oriented songs. So, you know, my goal was always, you know, to do things that maybe required some sort of education or background.
Well, yeah, to go that deep.
Also, you know, I wanted to be able to play all the instruments and know a lot about. I wanted to be able to produce my own stuff. I wanted to be able to, you know, do all those things. And
you need to know that.
You know, and I respect it. You know, I respected people who did that. So, you know, that was just my background. That was where I came from. So,
let's assume that suddenly the album sells bazillions of copies. Will you really not go Hollywood? Because there's an interesting, I mean, the album opens with, I mean, there's lots of interesting subjective things in your lyrics. But the fact that was the first thing that I heard on the record, you know, is an interesting approach to who you are, I suppose, and an interesting political commentary on probably, I mean, I don't know if you intended it to be this way, because it's certainly as poppy as it gets, no question about it. I mean, you know, I love when things with an opinion are surrounded by this incredibly sweet icing. Makes it easier.
Well, that's definitely like a big goal. I'm always a big sort of yin yang that I'm always trying to put into my songs, is this kind of dichotomy between the subject matter and the you know, sort of musical vibe,
if you want, it's served up or whatever.
But yeah, as far as I Won't Go Hollywood goes, I mean, certainly a lot of the, you know, thematic, the subject matter of the record comes from a personal place. But I also appreciate writing songs that are just stories, don't necessarily have anything to do with me, whether or not they're written from the first person or not. And obviously this is a long-standing tradition in songwriting. One of my favorite songwriters is a female songwriter, and constantly writes songs from the point of view, obvious point of view of a man. And she's not a lesbian or anything like that. It's just that's who she chooses to, you know, portray in that particular story. And that kind of is the case with I Won't Go Hollywood. It's not, you know, maybe at the time I was kind of like, I actually was in LA when I started writing it, I think. And it was more just kind of like an idea that I had for a song, rather, you know, as opposed to like this sort of like, you know, like heavy, like anti-industry vibe.
Right, no.
Or anything like that. Although, you know, I probably do lean towards the cynical, lean towards the pessimistic and that kind of thing. But, I mean, let's face it, I've already gone Hollywood.
Yeah, well, distributed by a major label, it's all over. The Boston scene, I mean, so many good things, and I know that you've rattled around with the Rick Ocasek's of the world, and you're talking to a guy who used to live at the corner of Newbury and Exeter, so there's so much good music that comes out of Boston, and they're definitely, you know, again, speaking of L.A., New York, you know, and then, of course, Chicago's got its own sound, but Boston just has to me, even during the punk rock days, even during the Mission of Burma days, or band that I'm going to play this Friday night, the Atlantics, you know, there's always a lot of pop in amongst, you know, and harmonies and all of that. And even the heaviest of the music of the Boston scene seems to be very melodic and a lot of harmonies. Do you think that comes kind of from the soul of the city or freezing your ass off in the winter? Or what do you think? There might be no answer to this, but I've always wondered about it because I play so much music, you know, from Boston, having lived there on the show.
I agree with you. No matter what is kind of going on, there's always great, what I would call power pop in Boston.
Incredible amounts.
And I think it just comes from a long standing tradition. And as a result, a support system, you know, for it.
But there's such an appreciation.
I'm not sure there is necessarily an appreciation.
You know what? Let me put it another way. Maybe because it's become the norm there that people wouldn't diss it as much as they would in other, you know, it's so much easier to diss anything that's got a simpler melody or someone's taken the time to really do the harmonies or fill in a glockenspiel or, you know, put things in there that aren't in your typical rock and roll. Or if they are, they're buried way down in the mix.
Yeah,
I don't think there's an answer to it. It's kind of cool.
It is.
It's a cool thing.
It really is. I mean, I'm always so excited at the new crop of bands like coming out because people always ask me, is the music scene like still good in Boston, or is the music scene good like now in Boston or something, you know, to that effect? And my answer is that I think it's always good.
I don't know when it's been bad.
And it will always be good.
Mm-hmm.
There are just always at least a handful of really amazing bands in Boston. I mean, seriously, I could tell you 12 bands right now that I think are absolutely unbelievable currently active in Boston right now. I mean, that will remain some of my favorite bands of all time, you know, and that's just it's a pretty awesome thing.
Yeah, no, it's good because
I really appreciate being a part of that, you know, like
it's a good badge to wear. I mean, it's a good place to,
if not a popular one, but
well, so speaking of which, are you willing to wear the power pop label? Because I can't tell you how many people have been in this room that when I dare to say that, I think the best one was, what, 2-3 weeks ago, Marshall Crenshaw sat exactly where you were sitting. And I read him his thing from All Music Guide. And he was listed under Power Pop, and he was listed under New Wave. And he just looked at me and he's like, oh, man, I'm not New Wave. I'm not Power Pop. And I'm kind of thinking, but it's okay. You know, I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if people understand what power pop is.
Sure. Well, if you know what it is, then, you know, I mean, I'll just be very honest and say, I mean, that's what I call the music that I'm really into.
Good for you.
So.
Good for you.
I feel that's not the only kind of music that I'm into. I'm into a lot of other type of things that I think you wouldn't classify as power pop too. And I don't think my music can just be classified as power pop. I think it stretches outside I make unbelievably eclectic music when it comes down to it. And I think that my music stretches outside the pure boundaries of power pop, but to deny that that's like a part of me would just be idiotic, because that is something that like I am very, very appreciative of. And I mean, some of the greats in power, in what I consider to be power pop, are on my record.
Indeed.
So,
indeed.
So what am I, you know, I mean, who am I fooling here, you know?
Yeah, actually, before we play a cut, I'm going to skip way down my questions, but, you know, actually Bill Janovitz actually sat in that very seat also when he came on the...
He's actually on the Christmas record.
Yeah, he sat on the you know, the Beatles tour, and he came with Graham Parker and Kate Pearson. And the three of them sat there, which was just, for me, just like, oh my God, this is so cool. But, you know, Jellyfish, who I play all the time, and, you know, Dan Wilson, who actually ballroom sessions, we actually have an authorized, well, they sent it to us. We've been playing it. We don't even know when that's going to come out, but we've been playing it.
You know, I played on that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, so that's what I'm saying. You've been on my show more than you know. Yeah. They sent me the CD. I wanted it, and they said, "Sure, we'll send it to you." We don't even know when we're going to get a label for it, but we'll be glad to send it to you. And again, that same kind of genre. And you know, every once in a while, people.
Dan's record is that the ballroom sessions is not a power pop record.
No, it's a rockin' record.
I think the semisonic stuff was pretty power pop.
Mm-hmm.
Moving away from it somewhat in the last record, but this record is, I would compare it more to like Tom Petty record, or
rocks out more.
It's more, well, it's not even that it rocks out more, but it's more just like very classic, less clever songwriting, more classic, less clever, you know.
Which, but could get a lot of airplay.
I think is the balance in power pop. It's that balance between clever and classic that you're always, you know, kind of riding or whatever. But you know, you asked me earlier what songs we should play.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in San Francisco, and I should tell you, the hidden track on the record was a tune that I wrote as a Jellyfish tribute when I was barely out of high school when I first started that tune. And I really honestly wrote it as a Jellyfish tribute. And when I met Andy Sturmer, I asked him if he would finish the song with me, because I had never finished it all those years, and he finished it with me and played drums and sang all the background vocals and just.
So it's behind me, hidden here.
Because
you see, I can reach over and you can talk for 5 seconds.
Do you have the Japanese, the import release? Because it's actually listed as a track on the.
But is it on here?
Yeah, you have to like fast forward to like get to it, you know.
So you know what?
But we should play, just because we're in San Francisco. I talked to Andy on the phone last night and
well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. And you'll tell me how to get to it. We're going to play I want you to tell me the quick story about the cut we picked. And then we will segue into a Christmas tune. Right, with all of the smoothness that I am known for in my multiple segues.
Smooth.
From the old progressive rock days. Yeah, we actually on this show, as our listeners would tell you, we let things overlap and we don't put a, you know, KUSF in between them. We actually do real live 3 or 4 set songs segues. It's been
known
known to happen, and we get away with it, you know, and the audience puts up with it. But tell me the story, and then we'll play the Christmas tune, and then we'll play the hidden. Then we'll dig into the hidden track.
Sweet.
So, but come on, you gotta tell me. Tell me the story about. Sorry, CBS for this. Sorry, because I know you know, give me distribution and stuff. But succumbing to the. Tell me the dick story.
Oh well, yeah, as it turns out, actually, you and I, from what I understand, of the FCC rules.
Yes.
Can say dick.
Oh, we can say, yeah. Yes, with dick.
I can say,
you can
for
say,
instance.
You can say dick, yes.
I can say, for instance, you're.
Katie, can he say dick? Is it okay?
I can say, you're a dick.
You can?
I can say that guy's a dick.
That's right.
Or what a dick.
That's right.
Or
my favorite.
I can say, I got dicked over.
You can say my favorite detective is Dick Tracy.
You can say that. You can also say, that don't mean dick.
Yes, you can.
But I have to say that you have a very, very large, from what I understand, penis.
That's right.
I am not allowed to
say... Well, thank you, by the way.
I am not allowed to say that you have a large D word.
According to the record company.
Yeah, and so, this...
That's because they have small ones.
Yeah, exactly. This is the rule, and actually, I was really worried about this particular song. And it's funny, actually, that was my original lyric to the song. People think that the original lyric was a different cuss word that I was forced to change it to this cuss word. But this was my, because it's a very natural common phrase that I use far too often. And that, you know, this was the phrase that I wanted to use.
And that doesn't mean, and it turned doesn't out mean
they,
dick.
They, yeah, exactly. They picked through it with a fine tooth comb. There actually is another bleeped, or truncated or whatever cuss word on the record, but this one stayed, and I'm happy about that for what it's worth.
All right, let's listen to a little blue here on the Menace's Attic on 90.3 KUSF. I didn't move the microphone far enough, so I'll just hit this here.
We had a moment. We had a We had a night off, we had a few drinks, we happened so fast. Before I noticed, we had a sofa. I know, we had a few fights. I didn't see why we had to say bye. I'm doing fine, my friends are. I'm doing all right, but that don't mean dick unless you know, I know you know. I got my good days, I got my bad days. I know one day I'll be like I was. I'm going out more and I've been dating. There's even one girl I'm kinda seeing. She really likes me, we got a good thing. She keeps on telling me I'm doing fine, my friends all say so. I'm doing all right, but that don't mean dick unless you know, I know. Chance.
my knees and pray for a snowy day. Cause I need a break and I wanna spend the day away. I need a snow day. The leaves all fell and the streets were cold, but the sky was as dry as a bone. When the clouds rolled in like a holy sign, we all built up a fort at the bus stop sign. Tracking snow in the door at the 5 and 9. Get the marshmallow ready for cocoa time. On my knees and pray for a snowy day. Cause I need. I need a snow day. 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 On my knees and pray.
Okay, how much did you have to pay the kids?
Oh, yeah.
And how many kids were there? How overdubbed were those kids?
I actually recorded them. They're from a children's theater group in Newton called the Turtle Lane Playhouse.
Newton. So these are not poor kids. If they're from Newton.
Well, I never claimed that they were, but
these kids have come from means of some sort. So it's a snow day to them.
Some of them, perhaps.
A snow day to them. What the heck? Mom and Dad can just pay for a snow day, right?
Well, that's terrible.
I'm sorry.
No, no, they were great. They were very, very enthusiastic, and it was quite a long time ago now. It was in 1998, I guess, when I recorded them. So was that right? No.
So they've all gone
no,
on
99.
So they've all gone on to Exeter now.
Yeah, but
and they're in Harvard and Yale on non scholarships because their parents can afford it anyway.
No, but yeah, they were nice to participate. That had always been a dream of mine to record a big group of kids.
No, they sound. I'm being facetious. They sound really great.
Oh, they're great. I mean, they're just screaming their faces off. But
yeah, but the energy. I mean, I say this as a compliment. That song feels like a snow day.
Yeah, totally. And the
it's
thing
such
is,
a joyful song.
They're really young kids too. They were relatively young for the most part. And I really wanted a group of young kids because they're just crazy.
Yeah, exactly. You know? No, I'm sure they had a ball. Speaking of young kids, now you won the people here don't know what it is, but WBCN has the Rock and Roll Rumble, and there's this long list of amazing. Didn't the Cars win the Rock and Roll Rumble? I mean, an amazing, amazing amount of people.
Well, what's amazing is how many bands that lost or didn't even make it to the second round.
Who are some of the like the notable characters that lost the Rock and Roll Rumble?
Mission of Burma didn't make it to the second round.
Right.
Who else? Yeah, the Lemonheads. Yeah.
I'm not going to tell my Evan Dando story again. We interviewed Evan Dando about what, 6 months ago already. My listeners know the story really well, but Evan's been through a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was one of the more interesting. You interviewing you compared to him on a scale of 1 to 10 of simplicity and ease, you're a 464.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Lemonheads didn't make it. Wow.
No, but
amazing. So, but that's not a bad thing that you did.
Oh, I mean,
yeah, we won't hold that against you,
no,
right?
I'm not complaining. It was. It was really a thrill. I mean, I'd seen so many bands, you know, go through that, you know, in the years previous. I mean, it's really like a big deal in Boston, and it really fosters some awesome competition, I think. And you know, everybody like really gets pumped up and like pulls out all the stops for those shows. So
we don't have something that good here in San Francisco. We need a rock and roll rumble. Just a couple of more questions, and then we're going to get to kind of the secret track. The choir. You're doing this thing with recruiting the choir, and we did try to recruit people on the show. So if anybody shows up like really off key or really strange, they're my people.
Okay.
Undoubted. In fact, we probably will plant some people just on principle to have them show up.
Nice. Yeah, you guys should come by and do the choir.
Be part of the choir, yeah, absolutely.
You just have to show up at 5 today. Well, of course, by the time this airs, we will have already
right, but
done
that's
the choir
what. Yeah,
show.
No, we can do a post. You can tell me who shows up afterwards. We can have a conversation afterwards, and I will report to the listeners what they did to you.
Okay. No. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most thrilling things I've ever had the opportunity to be a part of. I've just been organizing these volunteer choirs. We started it in Boston for a couple of one-off like CD release party type shows, and it went so well that we decided to keep doing it. We've had 4 shows in Boston now, 1 in New York, and the last time we did it in Boston, we had 40 people, and we performed at the Hat Shell where the symphony
terrific
performs.
Gotta love that
outdoor venue. And it was just, I mean, it's the energy that these people bring to the music is just phenomenal. Snow Day actually is one of the tunes we're doing.
Oh, that's got to be fun.
But yeah, I mean, it was too fun to not try to bring it on a national scale. And I've never been so excited about something, honestly. So, you know, LA's next, and then Minneapolis, Chicago, and we're doing 9 cities across the country organizing these volunteer choirs. And we're just going to try to keep doing it bigger and bigger. But, you know, it's a way that everybody can participate and be a part of what we do. And I always wanted that to happen. And
everybody needs their 15 minutes, and
yeah,
why not?
You know,
why
so.
Not? So speaking of L.A., and you will have done this already, but it's just totally ironic that I was listening to they're not necessarily a typical band for me, but I was listening to a pre-flight sessions by the Birds because they had sent me a copy of it recently. And I happened to open up the book on my way there, and I didn't even realize that the front room of the Troubadour is basically where they ran into David Crosby, and they wrote some of their most famous songs in the front room of the Troubadour. Huh. So there's a lot that happens in places like this. So when you go to a place like the Troubadour, you know, and those kind of clubs, and Café du Nord, you'll find, you know, it was like this underground, you know, it's a pretty famous kind of place too. So do you get different vibes when you go to these? Does it make you feel like you walk into the Troubadour and I'm playing here, and you realize all of these people that have come before you, and they kind of the not their ghosts, because luckily some of them, amazing David Crosby still alive and isn't a ghost, but so many of them. Is that kind of a whole joyful moment in doing all of this?
Yeah, definitely. It's an honor. It's a thrill just to be able to go around the country and you know, kind of in a certain way, you know, almost like be a part of history or something like that. You know.
Yeah. So what is, I mean, I'm going to skip all the what are you listening to now and all of that, because we know what you're listening to. It's pretty obvious by the music that you make that you...
Plus, it doesn't matter what I'm listening to. You should go out and find your own...
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I think that makes a lot of sense. But, again, being a little cynical, because I am a nice Jewish boy from New York who spent enough time in Boston, so I kind of got the mix there. Has the record company figured out how to promote you yet? Have they figured out? I mean, because this is a beautiful thing, and I say this sincerely. This, you know, Redhead is just it's a. Everybody should be listening to this for the mix of what's going on it, and the people that are involved in it, and how well it is done. But the interesting thing that I find, and especially doing the show that I do, and I'm not trying to get you into a commercial radio yuckarama zone, because I don't think that's necessarily relevant, because I think the commercial radio definitely has its place coming out of it. I think that it is the only way that a bazillion records are going to be sold, so it has to get on there. But it also is, in having worked with all the record companies who are constantly calling me up and pitching things to me, this studio makes all sorts of great sounds. It doesn't matter. It's part of the ghosts of KUSF. You're in the Father Spieler Memorial Studio. Father Spieler was around from, I've never met, I don't know, probably Spieler, but only I would pronounce it Spieler. he was a great father. He had a lot of convincing qualities. But has the record company figured out what to do, and are you feeling good about all of that?
Well, I'm very lucky in that I'm on Aware Records.
I was going to say, because Aware is the Thorns, and there was that same connection. We had them in here not that long
ago. Well, honestly, you know, I think people look at a lot of Aware artists and they kind of think, oh, well, they're these huge artists. But all of the artists that Aware has had success with have been kind of left of center.
It's true.
And frankly have taken quite a long time to sort of, bubble up to the surface and reach their sort of zeitgeist or whatever. And so I actually feel very lucky that they're not, I don't feel like they're really making an attempt to like stick this marketing plan on me or something like that.
So the independent promoter is not handing people $50,000 to play the record, and that's a good thing.
Well, it's not so much that, even is that they're not trying to like pigeonhole me, or they're sort of like just putting it out there and finding out what the audience is, finding out what it is that people like about this record and want out of this record and that kind of thing. And I really appreciate that about Aware. They also, allow a long period of time for their artists to find their place, you know, which...
So it's not like, okay, deliver the next record or you're out of here, buddy.
Yeah, or, you know, if you don't have a hit immediately, you know, you're out of here, which is, you know, the attitude of most record labels, I think.
Indeed. So what's next?
I feel pretty good about it.
So the infamous last question before we do play the secret track, which, see, I didn't know there was a secret track, so I'm pretty excited in and of that, you know, because I haven't even heard it yet. So, boy, it's going to be a secret track for all concerned. What's next? Are you already working on... I'm sure you've got tons of songs that are waiting for the, you know, to hit the home studio.
Well, I'm always writing and.
But you mainly, are you about touring and kind of working behind this at this point?
Really, I mean that is my main objective right now, is to just get this record out there. But I'm always looking towards the future, and I have a lot of big plans for the future. I've actually been writing some material specifically for the choir. So I'm excited, you know.
Have famous people shown up to be in the choir?
A couple, yeah.
We got to dish a little bit here.
I mean,
do you know anybody in LA that's going to show up, or tonight who's going to show up?
Yeah. Maybe.
You see, now it's funny. His manager is shaking his head and saying, oh yeah. And Blue's doing the right thing.
Well, I just don't want to, you know, I don't want those people to
stand out in the choir.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to pick them out and say that's why this is good, because the whole idea behind the choir is that it's for anybody.
That's right.
It's, you know, so.
They get to be egalitarian no matter who they are.
Yeah, exactly. And also I think maybe, you know, at least one of the people maybe wouldn't want people to, you know, just wants to be in the choir, doesn't want, you know, people
to... just wants to sing.
Exactly, you know, so...
What a concept. Well, thank you so much. I mean, the best of luck. I have to say that I'm, again, a huge fan of the music. I think you're doing some great stuff. Totally fits into what I do, and it's just so rare to get something that so easily does that I can put on and immediately say I want to play it, because I tend to have so many CDs that I'll bring them in the car in the morning on the way to work, and I'll listen to them, and then I'll put them away for a few weeks, and then I'll listen to them again, and I'll put them away, and then I'm like, this is just not gonna, it's not gonna happen for me, and that did not happen here. So tell us quickly about the secret track.
Well, this was a tune that I wrote right when I got to college as kind of like a Jellyfish tribute. I never finished it. And I got to finish it with Andy Sturmer, the lead singer, songwriter, drummer from Jellyfish, probably my favorite band of all time, and a legendary San Francisco band as well. He finished it with me, helped me with the lyrics, helped me write the bridge, played drums, sang the background vocals, kind of co-produced, and helped mix and all those things. And I mean, this is the culmination of a dream for me. It's the reason it's a hidden track is because it's wildly unlike any of the other material on the record. It's really a tribute song, but it's great. I totally love it.
Well, thank you so much for coming by. And
it was my pleasure.
The
album, this was great.
The album, I'm going to do the commercial thing. The album is called Redhead. It's by Blue, B-L-E-U. It is, am I supposed to officially say Aware Records and then I
Aware
don't say
Columbia, yeah.
Aware Columbia. It's at a record store near you.
Indeed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It all started with a search for a magazine. An ordinary night, nothing too obscene. I saw you looking at me like a sweet Savannah day. No ordinary girl would look at me that way. If I could take you home and fire up the gramophone. Dance, dance, baby doll, dance. With you I never need to fake a romance. I'll even let you lead if you think you can tempt me. Baby, we can go to the bathroom and dance, dance, baby doll, dance with me tonight. I love the way you don't complain when I come home late.
Else to be debated. And if you say
Well, there you have it. The first hour of Just Another Menace Sunday is almost over. How darn exciting. Interview was with Blue, B-L-E-U. If you are interested in what you heard there, you can get his CD. It's not his first CD, but it is his first major label CD. It's called Redhead. It is on Aware Columbia Records. Again, it's called Red Blue, B-L-E-U. Check it out at a record store or CD store, if you so choose, near you. A couple of things that I'd like to tell you about before we get into hour number two of Just Another Menace Sunday with yours truly, Dennis the Menace. Next Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m., boy, it's going to be 4 hours of me. That's really scary. I'll be doing a spotlight. The Animals versus the Hollies, two of the British Invasion's biggest bands. We're going to be playing the hits and the rarities of the Animals and the Hollies. That'll be 2 to 4 p.m. Spotlight, 90.3 KUSF. Also, if you like what you hear here, well, combined with some older stuff, there's another radio show you might want to check out. It's called The Menace's Attic. It's been on for a few years now. Oh my God. It's every Friday from 9 to 10 o'clock. So you have your choice. For those of your friends who want to listen to this show from far off lands, they can go on iTunes. They click on radio, then public, then KUSF. Or they can go to www.live365.com/KUSF. And lastly, if you have any comments, any input, write to Dennis at menaceattic.com. M-A-N-A-M-E-N. Huh? I can spell. M-E-N-A-C-E-A-T-T-I-C.com. And now it's time for hour number two, which means Allison is going to hit CD number two. Get ready, and here comes new music.